Devaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Panchadamam navadvaram. Okay, that's the second verse. Okay, I'll chant the first verse myself, and then we'll chant together the second verse. Panchadamam navadvaram ekapalam trikoshtakam shatkulam panchavipanam pancha prakriti stridovam panchadamam navadvaram ekapalam trikoshtakam shatkulam pancha viparnam pancha prakriti stridovam pancha adamam. Five gardens. Navadvaram. Nine gates. Eka. One. Palam. Protector. Three. Poshtakam. Apartments. Shat. Six. Kulam. Families. Pancha. Five. Vipanam. Stores. Pancha. Five. Prakriti. Material elements. Stri. Woman. Davam. Master. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In that city, the material body, there are five gardens, nine gates, one protector, three apartments, six families, five stores, five material elements, and one woman who is the Lord of the house. Now we chant 57. Panchendriyarta arama Dwadak prana nava prabho Tejo bannani koshtani Kulam indriya samgraha Panchendriyarta arama Dwarak prana nava prabho Tejo banani koshtani Kulam indriya sangraha. Pachendriyarta Rama Prana Nava Prabhu Tejo Banani Koshtani Kulam Indriya Sangraha. Panchendriyarta Rama Prananava Prabhu Nani Koshani. Indriya Samgrabaha. Ladies. Kostani Samgraha Pancha. Five. Indriyartha. Sense objects. Adama. The gardens. Dwadaha. Gates. Pranaha. Apertures of the senses. Nova. Nine. Prabhu. O King. Tejat up. Fire. Water. Anani. Food grains or earth. Koshtani. Apartments. Kulam. Families. Indriya Sangraha. Five senses and the mind. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear friend, the five gardens are the five objects of sense enjoyment, and the protector is the life air, which passes through the nine gates. The three apartments are the chief ingredients, fire, water, and earth. The six families are the aggregate total of the mind and five senses. Purport. The five senses that acquire knowledge are sight, taste, smell, sound, and touch. And these act through the nine gates, the two eyes, two ears, one mouth, two nostrils, one genital, and one rectum. These holes are compared to gates in the walls of the city. The principal ingredients are earth, water, and fire. And the principal actor is the mind, which is controlled by the intelligence, buddhi. Here we're reaching the end of this story told by Narada. Most of the Bhagavatam we accept as actual history. The events actually happened. The people described are real people, but there are very, very few exceptions. Some stories that are told that are meant to be fiction, that are intentionally fictional, this is the only extended fiction in the whole Bhagavatam, is this story of Paranjana. And the only two other examples of fictional accounts that I can think of are also spoken by Narada. The short instructions he gave to the sons of Daksha, the Haryashvas, and then their younger brothers, the Shavalashvas, received other instructions. Allegorical. In an allegory, all the things that happen, everything that's described, and all the people who are mentioned, stand for something else symbolically. The real meaning is just symbolic. And that's the case of this Paranjana story. King Paranjana isn't a real person. What we're told about that he did never really happened. But
He's in Western tradition, there's this medieval character Everyman, and there would be dramas performed. Everyman is a symbolic representation of every man, every fallen living entity in this world. And that's what Paranjana is. He represents all of us. And he was attracted by this woman who represents the material intelligence. And she convinces him to take up residence in this city with nine gates, just as our intelligence makes us identify with material bodies and undergo all the complications of material life. So that's the story of Paranjana. In the beginning of the story, we were told that he had an old friend that he forgot. And now that old friend has appeared at the very end of the story. When Paranjana takes birth as a woman, and then he marries a very saintly prince. The prince dies, and she's lamenting. And then her old friend appears all of a sudden. Paranjana's old friend. And that is the super soul. Narada, there are almost no real characters in this story. Everyone is fictional. There is casual mention of Narada that old age personified tried to marry him. And there's a mention of Agastya Rishi. I think the Paranjana took birth as his daughter of Agastya, something like that. He's in there, mentioned. The only actual real character, though, in this story is the super soul, the old friend. So the super soul and two sages who make cameo appearances are the only real characters in this story. And that also symbolizes the real situation in our material life. The Supreme Lord is real. He's the only real person here in this world. And the great devotees and sages, they're real. But everybody else is living a life of total illusion in this world. The super soul is everybody's friend. This is what we've forgotten. We can study philosophically about the powers and influence of the super soul. Krishna discusses enough about that in the Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasya chaham vidi sannivishto matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. Krishna says it very briefly in the Gita. I am residing in the heart of every living person. The living being is sitting in his material body. And the place in the material body where the soul normally resides is the region of the heart. In that same heart, Krishna accompanies the living entity in the form of the super soul. He doesn't do much. He's basically a witness. Just like a person has a bodyguard. The bodyguard's business is simply to make sure that no one does any harm to the man he's guarding. And if nobody threatens harm, then he just keeps an eye out. He's just a witness. The super soul also doesn't have any life of his own, so to speak. He doesn't show his leelas. Actually, the super soul is not any different than Krishna. So his leelas are going on, but not visibly. All he shows is he's standing there with four arms, smiling, and witnessing. But Krishna does say the subtle functions that he does perform, the services he does provide. Matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. Of course, he's talking in first person. But Krishna actually expands as Vishnu, Kshirodakshai Vishnu, to enter everyone's heart. The ordinary living entities don't have Govinda in their hearts. That's for special devotees. Ordinary people have Vishnu in their heart. And he performs the functions, matak smitir gyanam apohanam cha. From me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Living entity cannot remember anything without the direct help of the supersoul. When a person wakes up in the morning, he wouldn't remember who he is, his name, and what he's supposed to do when he wakes up, what his job is, and who his family are. We wouldn't remember that if the supersoul didn't remind us every morning. Just like we probably wouldn't get up unless the alarm clock rang very loudly. So also, after we respond to the alarm clock, the supersoul has to remind us who we are. And also, just as important a function is forgetfulness. If we remembered all the horrible things that happened to us in previous lives, and all the horrible things that we did to other people, we would be ashamed and terrified. We wouldn't be able to live a normal life. So the supersoul helps us forget. Helps us forget the pain of birth, the pain of death, and all the pains that we cause and suffer in between. The supersoul helps us forget these things so we can go on with our life in a normal consciousness. He's everybody's friend. This is the important thing. This supersoul in this story is represented as the old forgotten friend. Krishna defines himself in the Gita also at the end of the fifth chapter. Tells us how we can achieve peace in our heart by understanding him in these ways. Boktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Sutinam Sarvabhutanam Gatva Mam Shanti Mrityati. We should understand that Krishna is the enjoyer of everybody's yoga tapasam, everybody's sacrifice and austerities, all the hard work that anybody does. Most people have to do some kind of hard work. Animals have to struggle to get food, to not become the food of somebody else. Human beings struggle sometimes as much as the animals and sometimes even more, just for their survival and their prosperity. Everyone's working so, most people are working very hard. But who are they working for? We're not self-employed. We're employed by the Supersoul. Everyone is working for the pleasure of the Supreme. Whether he admits it or not, most living entities in this world refuse to admit that they're servants of the Supreme Person. But still, they're working for him. We get everything provided to us by our employer, and he's actually enjoying the profit of our labor. No matter what we think, no matter what our attitude is, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all of our work. And he has a right to claim that. Looking at the whole of existence as one big corporation, it's a sole proprietorship. It all belongs to him. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Krishna claims, rightfully claims, sole possession of everything that exists. So therefore, if a person is sole proprietor of a company, he can claim for himself all the profits and pay his workers whatever he can negotiate with them. But he's the sole proprietor. Krishna is a Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. So when people understand that much about God, which is only 2/3 of the formula Krishna is presenting, When people only understand that much, then their relationship with God is based on fear. It's considered a virtue in our Western culture to be God-fearing. That's much better than to be materialistic and atheistic, to fear God and respect Him and obey His laws. That's also there in Vedic culture, but it's understood it's not the whole picture. God is not just the supreme dictator. He's not just terrible. He's also everyone's best well-wishing friend. Suridam sarvabhutanam. And everybody's friend. This is a basic quality of the Supreme Lord in His original personality and also when He appears as a super soul. He's fair. He doesn't have any bias for or against anybody. Sarvabhutanam. Even those who rebel against Him, even those who are indifferent to Him or actively envious of Him, He still shows friendly regard for them. He provides everybody all the necessities of life and even reciprocates with our demands for luxuries. As we deserve, He gives. And He gives fairly to everyone. Yeyita mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyam. As everybody approaches me, I reciprocate with them accordingly, with complete fairness. No particular friends or enemies. Then somebody may question, what about the Supreme Lord's special relationship with His devotees? Isn't that biased? He's killing the demons and giving favor to the demigods and Vaishnavas. How can you say He's equal? Krishna explains, Samoham sarvabhuteshu namidveshosti na priya. Yes, I am equal to everyone. No one in particular is my friend or my enemy. And then right after that, he says in the same verse, Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyaham. But those who worship me with love, I identify myself very intimately with them. He says, I am in them and they are in me. Not to be taken too literally. Not that we're sitting, that we literally sitting inside the body of Krishna. But we have such an intimate relationship with Him. More intimate, more concerned than He is with others. How can this be fair? But Krishna considers it's His opinion, and we have to accept His opinion, that it's perfectly reconcilable, that He's supposed to be equal to everyone, at the same time He's showing special favor to His devotees. He gives everybody what they want and what they deserve, and His devotees deserve this special attention. Krishna's taking care of everyone. This is described elaborately in the Bhagavatama. There are 10 major topics of the Bhagavatam. Two of them describe how Krishna is taking care of everybody. Poshanam, Stanam, and Poshanam. Stanam is the maintenance of the universe. It's how Krishna takes care of everyone. How He provides the necessities of life for all living entities. And how He provides the facilities of the Vedic literature that teach us how to live like civilized human beings and make spiritual progress. Krishna is providing the Vedic instruction also. In this way, this is poshanam, or stanam, the general maintenance of the whole population of the universe, especially the human beings. But there's another subsequent topic, poshanam. That is special protection that He gives to those who identify themselves as His devotees. We read so many stories of devotees getting special protection. from the Supreme Lord in the Bhagavatam. Prahlad, Dhruva, and all, so many hundreds of pure devotees who the Lord personally reciprocated in very kind ways. This is called poshanam. Just like a child is maintained by the mother, taken care of with special care by the mother. Pushti is another synonym for poshanam. So King Paranjana is learning now, after all of his experience, he's remembering his old friend. His old friend is coming back to him. This is our whole project of self-realization. It's called self-realization because we have to realize who we are individually. Not self-realization, by the way it's designated, doesn't mean to try to become something other than you are. It means to become who you really are. But who we really are has to be understood in terms of our relationship with our supreme friend, Krishna. If we leave that out, if we leave Krishna out of our lives, then we don't understand who we are. Jivaya Swarup Hoy Krishna Nityo Dash. This is what a living entity is. We're simply servants of Krishna. And if we leave that out of our lives, then we don't understand at all who we are. Bayam dvitiya abhiniveshatak syad ishada petasya vipariyo asmriti tanmayato buddha abhajetam bhaktiyaika yesham guru devatatma. 11th canto describes that as soon as we turn away from Krishna and give our attention to something that we think has nothing to do with him, this is called dvitiya. Some other focus of life other than the Supreme Person. As soon as we refocus our life, turn away from Krishna, and focus our attention and concern on anything else, then our lives become filled with bhayam, fear. Fear is the first emotion of material life. All the other emotions are just different ways of dealing with our fear. We become apparently happy, we rejoice with sense gratification, trying to forget the basic fear that's underlying our material consciousness. We become angry, we become fearful. These are all just symptoms. The basic emotion is fear. Bhayam dvitiyabhinivesitaksyat. As soon as we turn away from Krishna and turn toward anything else, then our lives become fearful. Ishada petasya vipariyo, and by ignoring what our real identity is as servants of Krishna, we assume various false identifications. Tanmayaya, and this is all facilitated by the illusory material energy of the Lord. Therefore, just as Paranjana is doing, we have to remember this old relationship with our forgotten friend, the Supersoul. Buddha Abhajetam, someone who intelligently understands his predicament and wants to resolve it, should worship that old friend. Abhajetam, Bhaktiyaika Yesham, Bhaktiyaikaya, with exclusive, intensive devotional practice, Guru Devatatma, and seriously accepting spiritual guidance, spiritual master as representative of the Supreme Lord. Guru Devatatma, a devotee who's aspiring to revive his relationship with Krishna, should accept the spiritual masters who are direct representatives of Krishna as their very life and soul. Guru Devata Atma. Not that we, like Mayavadis, pretend that we're losing our identity, but we identify with the opinions and the attitudes of our spiritual masters. These are appropriate opinions and attitudes, in line with what Krishna wants and what Krishna thinks. So, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chitete Koriya Aikya. The words that come out of my guru's mouth, I should take those instructions and carefully deposit them in my heart. And if there's not room for them, if there's contrary ideas in my heart, I should push them out and make room. Arna Koriya Manayash. I shouldn't maintain any contrary attitudes, any contrary opinions. That is Guru Atma. The Guru becomes one's own intelligence. His intelligence has to be accepted as superior to one's own intelligence. And one should worship the spiritual master with equal reverence as he gives to God himself. Then we can revive our devotional life. So Paranjana is getting his last chance. He's going to actually redeem his life by recognizing his old friend. The story, in the end, has a happy resolution. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments?
That idea that Krishna is partial toward those that worship him with love and devotion. It seems almost exactly the same as the old Judeo-Christian idea of the chosen people.
Well, same God. But chosen, but we get to choose. We choose. We do the right thing to get chosen. It's not like only people from a certain community can be on the list. Anybody can. Any living entity, any human being at least, who properly exercises his ability to choose and chooses to serve Krishna, Krishna delivers him. That's not really biased. It's not unfair. Every living entity has that opportunity, at least when they come to the human form of life, of taking to the remembrance and worship of the Supreme Lord. And we're being encouraged to do so. The scriptures are telling us, the Vaishnavas are canvassing us to remind us to do this. Anybody can do it, so it is fair. But to get the benefit, we have to make some attempt to remember Krishna and try to do some service. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
I was thinking then, basic feeling is everything starts with envy, not fear. But you said this first is pure fear, and all other feeling toward God is based on fear. But I was thinking first envy to God.
Yeah, okay, you can argue that because of some lack of good feelings toward Krishna, mistrust or something else, we turned away from him. So you can say that envy is the primary emotion. But we, in the beginning, we have that feeling, and then we're pushed into the material world as a punishment for it. As soon as we become rebellious in our attitude toward Krishna, then we're pushed into material existence. And as soon as we get into material existence, we start experiencing fear. The reason for the fear is being separated from Krishna. Without Krishna, how can we be happy? How can we be safe and secure without Krishna's protection? So therefore, it's natural that the first thing we're going to experience as soon as we enter material existence is intense fear. Anyway, I'm just saying it the way that the verse says in the 11th canto, Bhayam Dhruti Abhinivesha Taksyat. As soon as we turn away from Krishna, we become full of fear. Okay? Yes, Prabhu. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. Very lucid and clear explanations. This point about whether Krishna's fear or not, Prabhupada said it shows that he's a person. It's not an automatic thing.
Yes.
It's not punch the clock and you get a predestined result.
Yes.
Prabhupada used the example of that in India. Generally, the husbands are older than the wives, so they retire and they leave everything for the wife and they say, I'm going to Vrindavan, you send me 200 rupees a month. So Prabhupada said, if you come to Vrindavan and you are 200 rupees for Krishna, then Krishna will be 200 rupees for you. So you may say, well, I'm foolishly living entity, you know, why does he have to be exactly equal to whatever I do? And Prabhupada said, that shows that he's a person.
Yes.
In other words, as you approach him, he's going to deal with you accordingly.
Yes. He's a perfect person. He's a decent person, a completely fair person. There are other people, he's not the only person, but he's the only perfect person.
Earlier we were talking about Bhaktaram Jagyatapasam. That
yes.
The Lord is the enjoyer. Now we see that currently the human enterprise is oriented around producing material enjoyment.
Yes.
And exploiting the planet.
Yes.
And destroying nature and killing people and animals and so on. So this is, we've built an enterprise, global enterprise, that the product of which is on the whole not very, very good.
Yes.
So how is it, if Krishna is the enjoyer of all of our, what's he enjoying here? I mean, that we've produced all of this that is, seems to be not very enjoyable from Krishna's point of view.
Yeah, in the short run, there's no profit for Krishna to allow this to happen. But he's planning for the more distant future. This whole demoniac, materialistic endeavor for technological progress, when it fails in the end, then we'll learn something from it. When it turns out to be a total disastrous failure at the end. And we realize that it didn't make us happier. It made our lives more complicated and miserable. And we're left with nothing at the end. Then we should, at least intelligent human beings, will learn something from it. And they might become more spiritual. That's Krishna's purpose. To let us do nonsense in the material world and suffer the consequences. Paropi manute nartam tatkritam chabi pajate. The living entity who's actually a pure spiritual entity. He's actually an eternal servant of Krishna. Through his agent Maya, Krishna lets them try to be something else and suffer the consequences. And when we suffer the consequences, if we're smart, we'll learn something from it. That's Krishna's intention. That we, okay, try your nonsense, suffer from it, and then if you want to, you can come back to me after that. That's what he wants. That's what will satisfy him. When we learn our hard-earned lessons. Okay. Yes, Rav Asimov.
Thank you for a wonderful class. Usually you commented on several occasions on Krishna's your best friend. If I recall, when I had a best friend, I did have one at one time. Usually, you tend to like really show a lot of compassion.
Yes.
You know, you really, when you have a really close friend, you really want to do everything. You long to be with them.
Yes.
You help them. You give whatever you have of yourself to them. And if there's a difficulty, you'll do your best. You know, if you're a real friend, not just an acquaintance, we're talking
yes.
about a real yes. serious friend.
Yes.
You'll like, practically speaking, do anything you can to assist them. So, The argument could be that if that's the case, setting karma aside here, if that's the case, if Krishna is really everyone's friend, then why is it that some people can argue that, well, how can God's not my friend? Look at my situation. You know, look at what's happening to the world. Look what's happening to me. You know, nobody loves me. You know, I try hard and no one cares, and I'm suffering, and everybody just laughs at me. No one's really compassionate.
Yes.
You know, I can go on and on, by the way.
Yeah.
Give you a whole list. But so where is this compassion, this friendship that you're talking about? Where is this?
Well, a real friend doesn't give you immediate gratification. He's concerned about what's actually good for you.
Well, I'm not asking for any grant. Don't give me a car. I don't want a car.
Yeah.
I don't want a house.
You want to be happy.
I just want some real compassion. I want someone to really...
Well, that's... We have to get beyond this illusion. We have to realize, as devotees also, I'm not just talking to those who aren't devotees, even those who are devotees, practicing devotees, we have to learn to trust Krishna, that he's actually our friend. That he is expressing his compassion. It's not like, you know, he's too busy to give us any attention or that he doesn't care. Everything that's happening to us is the actual expression of Krishna's compassion, especially for Vaishnavas.
How does an ordinary person understand
that? Well, it's really hard. It's extremely hard. Therefore, don't stop being an ordinary person. Become a devotee. It's the only way you're going
to
ever understand it. No, but that's the only way you're going to get it. The only way you're going to get any decent treatment is to become a Vaishnav. And even if you're trying to become a Vaishnav, you're still going to have a hard time, you know, learning how to trust Krishna. It's the hardest thing in the world. Because of the inertia of our mistrust. And we think, you know, we have to look beyond our immediate suffering and see how it's actually good for us. Well, no, but you don't have to suffer. Just trust Krishna completely. Anyway, it's easy to say. Yes?
One thing that always puzzles me is the fact that Arjuna apparently didn't know that Krishna was God. He knew him as his friend. And similarly in Vrindavan, they keep seeming to forget that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they relate to him in much more human terms.
Yes.
So when we're thinking about always remembering Krishna, a lot of times we're remembering him in the mood of he's the Supreme Person.
Yes.
Or maybe not. But the question that I'm having is, let's see how to put it. Not to get caught up in the supremacy of Krishna. How come the pure devotees, these great devotees, they relate to Krishna without this constant remembrance of God?
That is by the special benign influence of Krishna's yoga maya. These great devotees. You can't become a great devotee without being completely aware of what God is, how he's supreme. You have to know very well that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And you have to establish your service relationship with him. You have to first of all be Krishna's servant. Before you can do anything fancier than that, you have to become a regular servant. Then you can graduate to higher relationships. So actually, all the great devotees, all the pure devotees, know perfectly well that Krishna is God. You can't become a great devotee otherwise. But those who are the most intimate with Krishna are blessed by the influence of his yogamaya potency, by which, on top of their knowledge that he's God, they forget that he's God. It's not like never knowing that he's God. They know, and their basic relationship is a relationship as servants. But built on top of that is something more intimate. that requires that they put aside or even forget that the fact that he's God. That, there's nothing much we can do to develop that special attitude. It's given to us when we deserve it. We have to be blessed by Krishna's internal energy. There's no way we can bribe her or make her give us his blessings. It's her. Bhakti is independent. This is a basic principle. Bhakti is independent. Nothing causes bhakti but bhakti's own choice, devotion. Devotion is completely independent. It enters our heart when she chooses to bless us. So all we can do is practice devotional service, trying to evoke those blessings, trying to attract them. But nothing we do makes it happen. It's not a mechanical process. Especially to come to the stage where you forget that Krishna is God and you assume a superior relationship to him. You become his older friend or his parent. That is only possible by the special influence of Krishna's internal energy.
In the story of Bhagavan, I'm not talking about the point of the teacher's side, but
In the pastime of Bilva Mangala Thakur,
yes.
He, from at least the way I understand it, Krishna was appearing to him, but he couldn't see that it was Krishna.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, if I have a really good friend, am I to assume that Krishna is acting through this person in some way, or is that impersonalism?
I didn't understand that last part about a good friend. Why should you assume that Krishna is acting through him? What is he doing? Okay. Well, yeah, but in the case of Bilva Mangala, actually Krishna is expressing, is reciprocating with him in a very intimate way by coming to him and arranging it so Bilva Mangala doesn't even recognize him. It's like a friend coming in disguise, enjoying the pleasure of being right in front of his friend and his friend not recognizing him. It's just for a special pleasure. It's an unusual situation arranged by Krishna himself. But it's based on having that intimate relationship. The thing that we have to do to make it possible to have such wonderful things happen is to establish our service relationship with Krishna. No, what was that about? What was the example again?
What was my question?
No, the example you gave.
Well, the example is when he's basically saying, look, I'm trying to do my meditation here. I don't want any milk. And Krishna's saying, no, here's the milk. So,
But that's a loving dealing. Right. That's just, a very sweet, loving exchange. That's the meaning of it. Is
But can we get too caught up in our practice that we actually? I mean, of course, Krishna.
Yes.
Would accept that, but I don't want any friends bothering me.
Yeah, no, because we have to realize what is the purpose of our devotional practice, sadhana bhakti, is to awaken love for Krishna in our hearts. If we neglect that or deny it when it starts bubbling up in our hearts, and we say, no, I can't be feeling these things. I'm supposed to be doing my sadhana. But that's the purpose of your sadhana. When Krishna actually comes to you, then you've achieved the fruit of your service. You don't say, get out of, Krishna, go away. I'm busy doing service. We have to be aware that that's the purpose of our devotional practice, is to awaken our love for Krishna and re-enter an intimate relationship with him. Yeah. And then Krishna comes right in front of him. And then when he realizes later, that was Krishna and I didn't even recognize him. He experiences great amazement. That's part of the rasa. Part of the pleasure. Okay. Thank you all. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.